Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers. And today, I'm being joined again by Jouk Pleiter, our founder and CEO. Jouk, good to see you again.
Likewise, Tim.
Welcome to the first podcast of the year we're recording. But even more so, we have Henning Soller in the call from McKinsey. Henning, it's really great to see you here in the podcast.
Yeah, very happy to be here. And quick introduction maybe from my side. Henning Soller, partner from the McKinsey office in Frankfurt, have been with McKinsey over the last 12 years or so, and basically have focused on large-scale IT transformations on the banking side and how they can also revamp their technology. So I think Jouk and myself are sharing a passion, at least sort of on the professional front. So I'm happy to take it forward from here and to talk about one of the, let's say, hype and difficult topics at the same time in terms of what we essentially see on the AI side.
Yeah, we're going to unpack where we currently are in the ecosystem. So just to quote a few of the lines from the latest McKinsey research, generative AI could add 200 to 340 billion in annual value to banking. AI chatbots in banking save 7.3 billion annually by automating customer interactions. And the last one, Gen AI supports up to 20% faster customer onboarding through intelligent orchestration platforms. So these are just a snapshot of the data points that are out there. In this case, these are all from the McKinsey research, but you see it across that there's a lot of very big, let's say, statements in terms of what can you achieve with the new AI wave. Maybe to kick off the conversation, Henning, what are you seeing currently in our domain when it relates to AI? What is proof of concept? What is just early days, maybe an innovation lab, and what is really working today that delivers these types of numbers?
So I think the first thing is, do we see the numbers already in reality? The answer is for sure no, because I think the numbers in terms of what is the potential have even further increased. I remember sort of numbers around 2.6 trillion. Now sort of we're at the 13, 14, 15 trillion range. So the numbers have been inflating even further over time. However, sort of do we actually see the respective change already on the ground? The answer is no. What we see is definitely the adoption of the no-brainers in terms of the respective tooling. So post-call summarization through the Gen AI tools, then also the respective possibilities of actually using Copilot and other tools, then also for the respective more automated code generation. Yes, for sure, we've seen that. And we've also seen that people have used the respective tools in order to do summaries of investor reports and similar kind of aspects. But this is not delivering the big numbers that are also contemplated in the reports and in the research that also we have contributed to. What we actually see at the moment is, we had already started on this as part of the conversation previously, was there are a number of POCs. So everyone has like 60, 70 POCs at least in the pipeline that are currently ongoing in various different areas of the bank. Typically, none or very little of the respective POCs have essentially scaled also to the degree that we would have wanted to at the beginning. And there have been a number of challenges with the respective POCs. I think sort of number one is, in several cases, these POCs have simply not generated yet the impact that was originally envisioned from the POCs, because what the respective tooling can do and what can also be done within the bank sort of have been two different things. Second is there have been many kind of challenges also with respect to the compliance side of the respective process enhancement and with respect to the improvements that are also supposed to be delivered. Also, that has been one of the major challenges in terms of the actual adoption. And then finally, in many of the cases, there has not been real business ownership also for the underlying business cases of that. And that is sort of one of the major challenges that we also see within the banks to date, is many of the respective programs are driven by technology, are driven by the innovation departments, as you say, Tim. And only very few are essentially really business-owned programs in the first place. And only if they are business-owned, they would also be connected to any kind of real impact that we would want to see. So the question is still open. And I think sort of there is still a lot of room for further improvement on the respective programs at the stage. I think this has also been a bit sort of going back to reality. I remember we had a group of asset managers that basically said in 2024, we will have at least 5 use cases in production by the end of the year. When we did the same review by the end of last year, none of those essentially had anything in production. When it comes to real production in terms of is this used day to day. So that essentially also exemplifies how big the challenge is in terms of actually generating benefit and putting these things on the ground.
And if we maybe can indeed unpack that, like on the compliancy side, like what did you see any pragmatic insights also for people here in the audience, like how can you work with the compliance department? How can you? So there's a lot of talk about like, okay, human in the loop. How do we verify? How do we? Any insights there, especially pragmatic, small recommendations that people can utilize to kind of find that right balance?
So I think you've mentioned some of the possible levers already. I think one of the aspects that we've seen with the compliance side is to make sure that they understand how the process would work and what is also the involvement of the respective model when also in the first place. So we have seen as soon as you get into the conversation, this is still with a human in the loop. No direct recommendation would go out directly to a customer in a shadow processing kind of fashion. This has typically eased down the respective compliance requirements quite significantly. Second is, what we've also seen in this respect is that one needs significant testing of the respective POCs then also upfront and sort of make sure that they are also involved in the respective testing processes. So when we also did this for one of the Eastern European banks, we essentially involved also the relevant business stakeholders in the A/B testing when we did lead generation through GenAI then also for the respective customers so that they also saw how would we then also test the model on an ongoing basis in order to ensure that the respective recommendations are also proper. There is a third challenge that is harder to overcome in a practical kind of fashion, which is the typical challenge around the regulatory requirements, specifically now looking also at the EU AI Act, also looking at similar legislations and regulations in other countries. What we've seen in this respect is honestly, number one, the respective model training in many cases has been driven in different geographies, but Europe, because the availability of the relevant training data and the respective testing infrastructure has been a challenge, and doing this in other geographies has simply been easier. Second was, however, to also closely look at what does the EU AI Act and similar regulations actually demand in the first place, because the real demand of the respective regulations is for transparency on where do you have models, what kind of data are the respective models also using. It's not about how is the model internally also fully structured in the first place. So focusing on what is really also required by the respective regulation has been one of the practical steps as well in this case.
So actually we should all move out of Europe, that's the conclusion.
I don't think that this is moving out of Europe. I think sort of Europe, for the right or the wrong reason, we can debate this long and short, sort of has taken the path of we essentially want to regulate this from the start. And this has been a very clear decision also by the European Parliament. And of course, sort of also for the protection of the personal data of the respective customers, this is something that is good and one can debate this for a long time. I think the question is really, how do I get to the relevant insights in an easier kind of fashion? And for several of the more complicated use cases, also looking, for example, at other industries on the car side, sort of for autonomous driving, the testing has simply been easier in other geographies, and we just simply needs to accept that as part of the business model and then move on from there.
Within that guardrail or within that frame of Europe, like how would you, I think the critical aspect here is, of course, if you are entering a new territory, you need to innovate, you need to take a little bit of risk, you probably need a level of speed in making mistakes and then becoming better. Any recommendation within this guardrail, how we can simplify our understanding of these regulations and we can kind of create some space to maneuver in a pragmatic way? Did you see examples?
We've seen quite a couple of the respective examples there as well, and it's basically going back to what does the regulation really demand, and what is also the corresponding inferred implications that we've often seen also with organizations. Because with many organizations, we had, for example, the discussion, now we need to move our data centers to different places. Now we need to move our people to different places. Now we cannot do any kind of proper risk analysis any longer because this is somehow involving personal data. And this is all not written in the regulation if you're looking at what is essentially written also over there. The challenge really is, and that has been also when we have been involved in the respective programs, has been the key is to actually have a safeguard for what is in the regulation, what is possible and what is not possible, and where do we also need the respective legal advice then also as part of the respective exercise. So as one of the examples, data center locations are not prescribed as part of the regulation, and therefore why would you invest into actually looking into different locations in the first place? On the flip side, several of the algorithms involve critical data, but it's not forbidden to use the respective data sets. You just need to make sure that you have then an assessment of what is the criticality, do you have the right security guardrails in place? And often this means targeted investments into cybersecurity rather than essentially getting rid of the process in its entirety. The final aspect that we have seen that is important is to understand what is actually then also the nature of the regulation. The regulator did not want to prohibit the full usage of AI in the European Union. What the regulator actually wanted was to have transparency on what is currently going on and to generate the relevant transparency also to customers. And therefore, the exercise that typically should have happened as part of GDPR in terms of looking at what are all the processes that I'm driving, what is all the data that I'm using, and therefore sort of what is the reason for using the respective data sets, generating that kind of transparency before getting involved into any kind of process changes or any kind of process adaptations to the regulation has typically been the better way to go because it's a transparency exercise, typically also helps in order to maneuver better on the process landscape, but specifically also helps with generating the relevant transparency without changing the processes in itself.
Is that the key takeaway? It's all about transparency. What data do we capture? How do we store it? Who can see it? And how are we using it? Is that, if you take that simple lens, if I'm simplifying it maybe a little bit?
So at least in the respective work that we have done, this was the key because what we had seen is oftentimes people get hung up with individual details and sort of with the lens of what is possible and what is not possible within the regulatory regime. Analyzing the processes in our case has led to 95% of the respective process analyses are completely non-critical because they are not involving critical data sets or the respective questions are very easy to resolve. This exercise boils it down to, okay, like what are the 5% of processes that are involving critical data sets and where the process is somehow critical and where the involvement of the model, if it comes to risk, if it comes also to the respective lead generation, where this also involves the respective analysis of the model and the sign-off that the model does not involve, for example, bias and similar kind of aspects. But this exercise has then essentially boiled this down to what are the 5% of processes where we need to get a lawyer involved, where we need to look at our processes, and then also get to practical solutions on that front. The second aspect that we've seen and that one also should mind as part of the process is oftentimes the legal departments, as well as also the lawyers, are not necessarily fully geared up for this new regulatory regime already. Data privacy, AI sort of have not been topics that have been the major focus of legislation in the past, and now it's a major topic. Often also looking at, do I have the relevant support both within my bank as well as also with the respective lawyers that I'm working with, has been key in many of the respective discussions, also in order to see what is the market really doing and what is also the relevant interpretation of the law.
Do you see that also as a need for an explicit opt-in, where an end customer can say, I'm okay that you use my data as long as you help me? Like, is there that opt-in requirement, or is there even an opt-out option required? How do you see that? I remember these scandals already from prior to Gen AI, where banks started to just with predictive analytics. They were using a lot of data, and it kind of, in a way, in some cases, it backfired in the public opinion.
Exactly. And I think one should always take this discussion really from a customer perspective. What does your customer really want? Because oftentimes what we have seen in the programs that we've led was, number one, analyze the processes, whether actually opting in and opting out is required. Because for the vast majority of processes, this is standard stuff and there is no opt-in, there is no opt-out. This is simply just going through. There are processes where an opt-in is required. Like, for example, when I need to sign off the respective external parties that I work with in terms of data analysis, could also be that this involves then the respective sign off of certain analyses and certain data that is provided on me that is used as part of, for example, a credit risk assessment and similar kind of aspects. What we've not seen is particularly helpful is to ask for, number one, super broad opt-ins, and or to ask customers for very complex forms in terms of filling out what kind of data they want to have used and what kind of data they don't want to have used. People are not understanding these kinds of aspects, and very broad opt-ins and opt-outs have often led to very, very complicated processes. What do you do if someone says my data should never, ever be transferred to a US-based server? Then you cannot use their data in Office 365 under normal conditions, which makes your processes extremely cumbersome within your respective company. And therefore, being very careful with how I formulate, how I actually do the respective opt-in campaigns, and always looking at can I recycle previously given opt-ins as part of the process, has been the key in many of the work that we have done. Also, because one always should mind, most of the customers want to have their personal data protected, but actually do not want to be involved at all with the respective complicated processes around opt-in. And about 90% of the respective requests for information that we see that also arrive on the desks of the respective customers actually have malicious nature. It's not that people would actually be requesting significantly for their personal information unless sort of they are in some shape or form fed up with the respective company. And then it's rather a question for your customer relationship managers to essentially fix that rather than for the lawyers to provide a very elaborate answer to a question.
If I may, Henning, you mentioned that, let's say for 9 out of 10 use cases, they're actually regular processes that don't need extra action, whether it's opt-in, opt-out, or whatever. That's just regular data going through. To me, that also rings a little bit the bell of all the internal processes that are typically relatively manual. They're either in spreadsheets. It's a lot of time spent of actual employees that are on the payroll. If I'm allowed, I'd like to connect it to the agentic move that we're now seeing in the industry, where you see a lot of talk and a lot of excitement around agents that can do the work for a worker as a co-pilot or completely replace those workloads, because these agents by now have the brain power, the intelligence to actually do real parts of work that are like digital employees. Maybe if we continue in that direction, is that topic currently at play already, or is it still also early days proof of concepts in your experience?
So this essentially is the same specifically in the banking environment. Most of that is essentially still at the POC stage, also in terms of the respective agents and replacing the work that is done. What we also see is that the respective agents and the proliferation and the usage of the respective agents has been more in departments that have previously already undergone process transformations and real digitization. So specifically, if it comes to operations in the respective banks, can I, for example, further automate the respective processes also around KYC or AML? There, the POCs are actually quite far developed. And there, sort of the key question is, okay, like this involves sensitive data sets under normal conditions. How can we sign that off? Do we really get this through the compliance department? How do we keep the human in the loop? All that. But sort of they are essentially accustomed to these kinds of exercises, where we see that the agents could have a lot more impact in many of the cases. But face quite some significant pushback, is specifically also in departments that have not undergone real digitization in the past, be it within the compliance departments itself, be it also within some of the departments like HR, legal, and others. Oftentimes, the respective solutions are actually quite easily available and also on the table. However, sort of their actual application is not immediately understood and not immediately also welcomed within the respective departments. We had, for example, the question, okay, we need to write a bank guarantee. Of course, sort of a lot of this can be automated through agents of actually putting that together and then having just a human essentially just cross-checking that. Oftentimes, however, we see that within the respective trade finance departments, the adoption of GenAI solutions in that space is rather limited, also because people are not believing that these kinds of solutions would actually be able to do the work in the same way or even better than they would be able to do. Similarly, on the HR side, of course, there are the respective solutions already out there in terms of, okay, I give you a few bullets and you write the respective job description that is also aligned with the typical compliance guardrails of the company, as well as also the broader ones around respecting the rights of people and also being inclusive of numerous people in itself. Oftentimes, the adoption on the HR side is also not there, simply because they are not believing that the respective solutions would be able to deliver the impact. So there, it's also a mindset question that we currently need to go through.
I think also I'm not sure who I'm quoting here, but those that need to be transformed are typically not the transformers. There's no incentive to embrace an agent and to replace your own work if you're a regular employee of the bank, I would expect. So what's this is major change management. Next to technology change, on top of a transformation you already have to do across the full institution, most likely. It seems like the challenge only is getting bigger as of late, Henning.
No one has said sort of that these would be particularly easy times, specifically since we essentially see that there is, specifically in Europe, but also elsewhere in the world, a renewed focus on cost and how can we also make sure that our respective departments also work more efficiently. The challenge that we essentially have seen also in a number of the conversations with the banks is essentially number one, this is an additional topic that somehow needs to be absorbed by the organization that is already short in capacity in many of the respective cases. Second is there is this mindset question and the challenge that specifically GenAI programs do not deliver to the majority cost savings on the technological side. They deliver cost savings on the business side. They deliver efficiency improvements on the business side. And therefore, they essentially need to be owned then also by the respective departments on the business side. And that kind of ownership is currently hard to get simply because people are pushed already quite significantly in terms of reaching additional business targets, reaching additional cost targets. So just simply taking those on is currently a difficult exercise given the big programs that are already currently underway. And then finally, what we also often see is that also the technology department finds itself in a challenging situation given that there are quite significant targets with respect to cost reductions in many of the cases on the technology department. On the flip side, there is the massive expectation of simply additionally delivering additional business use cases that can immediately be applied in order to reach also the efficiencies targeted on the business side. On the flip side, now they're also supposed to deliver additional GenAI use cases in order to deliver on the targets. And what we essentially see is the key to resolve this situation is to make also AI and GenAI much more part of the normal technological agenda and of the respective business processes from the get-go. So that GenAI is one of the tools through which we could then also deliver the respective business impact. And GenAI is one of the possible options that you would also have on the table, because we have seen that the programs purely focused around the technology and not what could be the possible business use cases have not led to broad-based adoption in the first place.
Maybe a couple of observations, but this is really NS1. It's my personal observation. I think in this earlier wave of GenAI, I think we were able to use prompting and people can do some note taking, and you see basically the simple little co-pilots on the side. But like I think that was just like a first little exercise. I think now with agentic, it's a different order of magnitude. because it is kind of basically creating a new way of programming a workflow, basically a process where you can now consult multiple models, you can consult the output, you can put it in the guardrails. So to me, that agentic thing is really the breakthrough innovation. To me, it feels almost like there was the internet, but then you had the browser, and then we start to do stuff. So I feel that's where we are. And of course, I think this will go 10 times faster than the internet. But this basically means that both business and IT people need to learn on how to reprogram something. Now, where with normal code, you can automate to a certain point, and then it stops. And after that, you need a person. And that's why we have SaaS, and that's why people are sitting behind the screen, because automation couldn't make that final step, right? I think we're now entering that final step, or that, not the final step, we're actually that next frontier where the human judgment call. And I think we, to me, this feels like electricity. We now basically, after electricity, people had to kind of invent, toasters, radios, fax machines, computers eventually. But I think it basically means that we're in every process where there's a human judgment call, any startup will jump on top of this. So every process will be reinvented. So, and in that regard, I think ultimately that also will probably drive that massive ROI. But it means like we are really at the baby is just born, like, and nobody has a clue on how to do this. How far am I off? Am I in a fantasy world? Did I have too much coffee this morning? Where do you think we are?
No, I think that's perfectly true. I mean, sort of number one, the baby is just born and we need to see what it can actually do. And second is also that, to be fair, Gen AI has basically hit us a bit sort of as a surprise. I mean, sort of this was long in the making with the respective tech companies, don't get me wrong, but sort of the degree to which it changed the way that we could deal with processes and the level of preparedness we had seen within the technology, innovation, data departments within the banks, but also on the business side was limited to say the least. So I think it's a bit sort of the situation, we have a baby that is just born and we have parents that are slightly overwhelmed with the task that they now also need to perform.
It's a pretty good metaphor. you kind of make it round. So we were talking about, hey, it's mostly on the IT side, businesses. Do you have any early indicators or where you say, hey, these use cases, they have high potential ROI? So if you were talking to business leaders, across any aspect or of banking, what would be your top three use cases?
I think, to be honest, the top three use cases are to a certain extent quite evident. Sort of, it's not like we're trying to suddenly reinvent everything. I think the question around how do we do proper lead generation, specifically in a contextualized kind of fashion, be it for retail customers, be it for corporate customers, definitely sort of is one of the use cases that is out there. I think there is almost no debate around that in the first place. I think similarly, the question around several of the operational improvements that one can see. We already mentioned the processes around KYC and AML. How can I also automate the respective unstructured data that is coming in through these kinds of processes and get rid of the paperwork that is done on the back office? It's almost a no-brainer that this would essentially go through. I think there is still the question that is open, specifically also on the corporate side more than on the retail side, whether this could also be used and also for the respective purposes of risk assessments in a much more contextualized kind of fashion, also in order to see what are actually product configurations that would be attractive then also for the respective customers, specifically on the corporate side when it comes to product sales and the respective pricing. That is, I think, one of the aspects where we will need to see also how far this can be driven. The thing, however, is what we still also see is that many of the customers leave the complete no-brainers, like full adoption of Copilot, like post-call summarization, like using also the respective tools that we mentioned on the HR side, leaving that on the table is just simply a miss already at this stage. Because how we typically think about the use cases is there are like takers, shapers, and makers on the use cases. Taking stuff off the shelf that is currently available is a no-brainer thing, and sort of Copilot and others essentially go exactly into that direction. The big use cases are within the shaping domain, where I basically have the use cases out there that are quite obvious, but I need to contextualize this within the context of my bank, of my customers. And this is an exercise that one needs to go through. What we don't think is that there will be a high number of use cases that actually require complete revamp, and specifically not also developing like your own large language model and so on. This, I don't think, really exists within the banking domain, at least not for the typical mid-sized bank that would be out there.
So in a way, that's good news, right? You can rely on horizontal technologies like large language models. You can tune them. Yeah, clear. It's more on your own data, et cetera, how you use it. So we all know these innovation labs, right? So dedicated labs, they do a lot of innovation, but then let's count the percentage of that innovation actually landing in the real business. Maybe I can say that is, if you say positively, underwhelming. Would you agree, or am I?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so then we look at a business leader. Like what kind of encouragement or what kind of practical advice can we give people? Like, okay, are we going to wait for central headquarters to do this? Is this a central function that needs to drive this? Or do we have to go more for a decentralized model where we allow people at business unit level or even at product level to innovate a little bit more? Maybe decentral in a bank is always contradictive to compliance. So like, how do you typically, you need to have innovation, some decentralization to allow a lot of flowers to blossom, to harvest the concept that really work. Any idea on maybe what I'm asking here, recommendation between central driven innovation versus more bottom up or a combination?
Very, very good question. Also, because we have seen this with a number of the respective clients in order to get started on the topic also in itself, and in order to push like, hey, this is a new hammer that we have within our technological toolbox. We have seen that central efforts are the only way how to essentially push that in the first place. Every effort that we have seen in terms of, okay, people should investigate this within their own business domain and see sort of whether they could possibly come up with something, this leads to very underwhelming results, because basically people are unwilling to touch then also their business processes. So at the beginning, this requires a central effort. This requires a bit of, to be fair, also revolution to happen, and a bit of central funding that is also required in order to get the ship going. I think that has been fairly clear. But this also leads to the challenges that we mentioned at the beginning, in terms of we let 1,000 flowers bloom, we let 1,000 POCs then also flourish within the organization. And then the ownership on the business side of the results of these central programs is typically limited or even critical of the respective results that are coming out. And therefore, what we essentially are seeing at the moment is that now the central programs and the respective POCs have to move to the business side and essentially need to be substantiated now also with business cases that are owned by the business side in itself, and that also need to be financed and driven out of the respective business budgets then also in itself. And just as a side story, we basically had gone through the same exercise also on the McKinsey side itself, sort of our own tool, Lily, sort of was something that was very much driven through a dedicated team as a dedicated fast speed exercise right from the get-go, in order to really also shake up our own organization and to shake up our own missing conviction that sort of numerous parts of our own business model could be digitized. Was the same kind of exercise that we also needed to go through. And now it's about, okay, how do we really make sure that the people also own the results that are coming out of the central exercise, and how do we make it part of our overall technological agenda?
Gentlemen, I think we should go for a wrap up, because there's already a lot of great, let's say, conversation here. So I'm trying to summarize it, and then you guys can still clarify a few things or highlight them. We kicked off with the statement that there's dozens of proof of concepts running. And the main observation that you've shared with the audience, Henning, is that, yes, they are being executed, but they typically lack the business ownership, or they lack the business case behind them to really bring them to life appropriately and basically implement them in the core function of the business. That is one. So we discussed how do you then get back to reality? What are the different steps to make progress? First of all, you shared there will always be a human in the loop, especially in critical processes, because you need that validation step. You can't fully allow an agent today to run that. You mentioned something very interesting to me, at least, where you said the testing procedure, everyone is at the table. So the moment you start building these types of capabilities, whether it's Gen AI or it's powered by agents, all the different stakeholders are collaborating to make that happen. So it's not just that compliance gets that, you know, at the end of the road, hey, we are launching this, can you review? But they're actually part of that more agile workflow almost to make it happen. And the final thing we talked about quite a bit is that the regulatory frameworks are typically looking for transparency of data, especially in the European context, where the double click on that basically delivered a discussion on what is really possible, what is really allowed, what does it mean to how you can make progress? And there's some misunderstanding there that nothing is possible. Well, a lot is actually possible, and 9 out of 10 of the workflows you're looking to reimagine are not even critical, so you can actually pursue. So I think also there's a bit of an educational desire, like really understand what the trade-offs are. And I think especially McKinsey can really help there, of course, to make progress. Then we moved on to the piece of what is holding the typical organization back. It's the mindset. People are typically resistant to change. That is a normal notion, but especially in this particular domain, who do you ask to transform themselves? I think we concluded it's a central effort. You really push it from the top down to get to a level of conviction that everyone makes the move. And also funding-wise, that is the, let's say, better model that you've seen so far to really make progress. And we talked a little bit about the use cases, just to repeat them for the audience. Number one, lead gen, meaning how do you get more share of wallet? How do you improve your product penetration, essentially, across all of your lines of business? Second one would be KYC AML processes, automating them intelligently. And lastly, assessing risk in the corporate and commercial banking domain. We're also there's a lot of opportunity to make it super, let's say, automated and intelligent, driven by AI and unlocked by AI. So that was my download of the past 35 minutes. Anything you'd like to highlight or just, let's say, if there's one thing you walk away with, this is the thing.
Maybe just one final aspect at the end, sort of, I think specifically also with some of the recent political changes and so on, sort of there is often a bit sort of a gloomy outlook on sort of the further economic growth, the further economic impact. I deeply believe that the best is yet to come specifically on this technology. And I think number one, because we see that the respective challenges on the adoption of the technology will be overcome. And there is so much, let me say this openly, stupid work that we can finally automate and make better jobs for the people. I think this is an amazing outlook. Second is, we discussed about, okay, like what can you do and what can you not do in Europe? This is one of the technologies that will really also foster international collaboration, like the great work that has been done in many of these cases in China, the great work that has been done on the US side, and the possible application of those technologies then also on the European side. I think it's a great way to push also for international collaboration. And I feel sort of this is a great outlook. And then, finally, I think the stupidity that we currently see in many of the user experiences of much of our technological equipment that we're currently using, if I look at my smart home installation and similar kind of aspects, seeing that there is such a much better user experience that we could look at going forward, banks that are actually able to deliver a personalized experience also on the retail side, I'm definitely looking forward to the changes that are coming.
Yeah, that's great metaphor. Wonderful. Yeah, Tim, I was just also contemplating a little bit like what is the leading indicator, right? And for innovation or for harvesting the opportunity described by Henning. If I look at 2 years ago with AI, I think the thought process in the industry was like, oh, this is only for the big boys. You can make large language models, but it has to be meta. It has to be like also the whole startup scene was like a little bit confused, like, hey, this is not like the iPhone. I just needed 10 billion and only then. And what happened in 24 is really profoundly, like you see a huge boom of startups. And I think that's the leading indicator. And that directly correlates that people start to realize like the large language models, the NVIDIAs, that's all the infrastructure, the picks, the shovels, etc. But now we can actually start to innovate on top of it. And that innovation is attacking that next frontier of digitization beyond just the normal coding rules, right? So people now start to talk about service as software, which is basically we're looking at tasks where you normally would use a human brain to execute. And okay, let's see how much of that work we can potentially kind of translate into a coworker. So that whole notion is that I think there will be millions of different tasks and co-work tasks that have to be refined. And I think that is where that agentic world will kick in. That is, but I think the highlight news is that is only starting. And if you look at only startups, I think that's the leading indicator, because they will, just like with mobile app development, they will go after every opportunity. So I really look forward to see a lot of inspiration there, which will then also inspire larger organizations either to adopt that in the context of fintech collaboration or to start to apply some of these concepts in their own innovation cycle. Just a little bit more of a bottom-up game, and also to highlight that you don't have to be big to innovate in this space.
Exactly. All right. Henning, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your perspective. Looking forward to seeing you many more times throughout the year, because this topic, of course, is top of mind for all of us. And looking forward to seeing you once more then. Take care.
Indeed. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Jouk.
Have a great day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.